Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 14,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
House lawmakers want the state Supreme Court to answer for cases waiting longer than 6 months for a decision.
I would love to monitor performance on my own deadlines. In my day job, unfortunately, I don't. I have a boss.
Also tonight, lawmakers likewise considering a bill that would require welfare recipients with a record to undergo drug testing. A similar bill was struck down as unconstitutional before, but this time...
I think if this bill passes the legislature and is signed by the governor, that this will pass the constitutional muster.
We'll also catch up on today's legislative action when it comes to sanctuary cities, defacing memorials dedicated to first responders, and shielding university president hiring searches from prying public eyes. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. The Florida House seems intent on bringing the state Supreme Court down a few pegs after a series of stinging courtroom defeats. Nick Evans reports the saber-rattling intensified last week as lawmakers approved new reporting requirements.
Florida's High Court doesn't set itself any concrete deadlines. It's actually part of the motto, which translated from Latin means soon enough if done right. But that emphasis on being correct rather than quick is ruffling feathers among some in the Florida House. This is Pensacola Republican Gary White.
Members, House Bill 301 requires the Supreme Court to send a report, a modest report, once a year for 5 years, and then it sunsets, asking about its performance according to its own time standard.
That standard is to render a ruling within 180 days, 6 months, from the date of oral argument.
In most cases, they endeavor to say, we're going to be able to hit that. They're not. They're not hitting that. 71% of the time in the last year, they did not.
House Speaker Richard Corcoran has taken aim at the judicial branch. 12-year term limits are a top priority, and Corcoran has even tagged the seven individuals who meet in private in black robes as the enemy of a good business environment. Some Democrats believe White's Supreme Court reporting bill is of a piece with Corcoran's broader attack. Representative Sean Shaw of Tampa says the measure violates the separation of powers principle.
Now, we may be upset. We may not like the fact that some of the decisions take time. That one, we're just going to have to take because of Article 5 of the Florida Constitution. They are a co-equal branch.
White and his supporters, like Jacksonville Republican Cord Byrd, contend there's nothing wrong with asking for information.
We ask the governor to provide reports to us. The governor and the executive is a co-equal branch. The governor provides reports to us. We're merely asking the court to tell us why they are taking so long to render opinions.
Aventura Democrat Joe Geller says he would be fine with the idea if it was what Byrd describes. A request.
But that's not what we're doing. This is phrased in a mandatory fashion. It says shall, which is us telling the court what to do without a word as to what would happen if they failed to do it. Are we trying to provoke some kind of a Florida constitutional crisis here?
The proposal gained passage on a mostly party-line vote. Speaking afterward, Representative White defends the idea. He says knowing there's someone keeping tabs encourages efficiency.
I would love to monitor performance on my own deadlines. In my day job, unfortunately, I don't. I have a boss. And so the fact that I know that he is watching and I'm going to meet my deadlines and be efficient.
But if the legislature is the boss in White's example, it would seem to reiterate Democrats' critiques. And while House Republicans rail against the Supreme Court, a measure that would track criminal sentences in lower courts has yet to get a hearing. Reporting from last year indicates there are vast disparities in how some judges sentence people of color, despite the state's point system. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
A panel of Florida lawmakers is advancing a plan that would require certain food stamp recipients to get tested for drugs. Regan McCarthy reports the move comes years after a federal court struck down a similar law for violating people's rights by unreasonable searches.
The bill's sponsor, Clearwater Republican Representative Chris Latvala, says this time the Constitution shouldn't be a problem.
There are eight other states that drug test in different forms, similar to what this bill does. And I'm by no means a constitutional lawyer, but I think if this bill passes the legislature and is signed by the governor, that this will pass the constitutional muster.
Latvala says the bill came to him from a group of high school students who entered his That Ought to Be a Law contest. He says he was impressed by the research the students had done.
And these students had gone back and looked at the original bill in 2007 and looked at the court case. And they had very good reasons why they thought that this would pass constitutional muster. Most significantly is that this just narrowly drug tests those that already have convictions. And that was really why I chose them to be the winners, because I knew that they had done their homework.
Representative Latvala's bill requires welfare recipients with a previous drug conviction to undergo a drug test before receiving benefits. If they fail the test, they'll get the option to go through rehab, which they must pay for themselves, or apply again in a year. If they pass the test, they'll be reimbursed for the cost of the drug test through extra TANF money, also called Temporary Assistance for Needy Families money. Miami Democratic Representative Keone McGee sees a few problems with the legislation.
Number one, I think it circumvents the probable cause requirement that's usually required by law enforcement when it comes down to invading somebody's privacy.
McGee also feels it's unreasonable to ask people seeking public assistance to cover the upfront cost of a drug test.
Now there's another barrier to quality of life. Now you're placing a $40 requirement before a person can actually receive the help that he or she needs. Well, if the person is already asking TANF for assistance, then it makes sense to come to the conclusion that that person would not have the $40 that to take the actual examination.
But Stewart Republican Representative Gail Harrell says she may have a solution for that.
If they do not have the money for the drug test, it could be that they are spending those dollars on drugs. And I don't believe that we should fund the sale of drugs through TANF dollars.
Officials estimate about 1.5% of the state's welfare recipients have prior drug convictions. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
All aboard Florida's Brightline Rail Service plans to begin operating a 30-minute route between West Palm Beach and Fort Lauderdale in late July. Before that, though, an effort to give the state more regulatory authority over high-speed passenger rail gets a Senate hearing tomorrow. The privately owned Brightline will expand the service to Miami in late August, according to a news release back on Friday. The rail service, which is expected to eventually extend from South Florida to Orlando, faces lawsuits from Martin and Indian River County, and has prompted legislation by Treasure Coast lawmakers. A measure going before the Senate Transportation Committee on Tuesday seeks to have high-speed operators pay for safety upgrades and would give the Florida Department of Transportation regulatory authority over high-speed rail where not preempted by federal regulations. It may be another 2 years before All Aboard Florida is running Brightline trains north at speeds of up to 110 miles an hour from Jupiter to Cocoa and then at 125 miles an hour to Orlando. In the release, Brightline said the company is, in its words, finalizing permitting and will have a better idea of timing to Orlando after operations begin this summer. Still to come on Capitol Report, there are still so-called sanctuary cities in Florida. Some in the state legislature would like to see that come to an end.
Our hands are already full, making sure that we enforce the law as it exists for this community.
Florida lawmakers want to increase penalties for defacing or damaging heroes' memorials.
Those that give their life for this country and pay the ultimate sacrifice, I think that they should be respected and that there should be more deference given to those than to a telephone booth.
And the search for public university officials in Florida is now open to public scrutiny, but some in the legislature think that shouldn't be.
We have to consider things like, do candidates that are being vetted, do they have an inside track that maybe we wouldn't be happy about? Is there enough diversity in picking candidates? And
support for Capital Report is provided by The Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
Legislation banning sanctuary city policies is moving through Florida House committees. The proposal requires cities fully cooperate with federal immigration officers or face stiff penalties. More on that story from Sarah Mueller.
Despite a large public opposition to Republican Representative Larry Metz's sanctuary cities legislation, it passed its first hurdle Monday. He and Republican Senator Aaron Bean are pushing a state and local government crackdown on illegal immigrants. Metz's legislation would force any so-called sanctuary city in Florida to remove all formal or informal policies shielding undocumented immigrants from federal custody. Democratic Representative John Cortez says the legislation will bankrupt cities and counties.
There's going to be a lot of cases. I talk about this because I had 15 years experience working in the jails where a lot of people who have documentation are still locked up for 3 or 4 days.
Many U.S. cities have policies that may shield undocumented immigrants because they lack manpower and money to arrest and hold them. Local law enforcement officers have many job duties besides determining people's immigration status. It also costs counties money to keep someone in jail while awaiting officers from Immigration and Customs Enforcement, also known as ICE. Miami-Dade County Commissioners say they paid about $1 million in 2011 and about $668,000 in 2012. The proposal now before lawmakers allows local agencies to bill the detainee for the costs, as well as petition the federal government for reimbursement. But federal courts have ruled that local law enforcement agencies aren't required to cooperate with ICE officers. Law enforcement agencies can also face civil rights lawsuits for voluntarily detaining someone without probable cause. Some House members say the legislation means racially profiling Floridians. Tallahassee Mayor and Democratic gubernatorial candidate Andrew Gillum says he questions whether the legislation itself is constitutional. He says he doesn't want to force the city's police officers to question residents about their immigration status.
Are they now requesting that we become Immigration and Border Control? Our hands are already full, making sure that we enforce the law as it exists for this community.
The legislation fines local governments that don't comply with immigration officers between $1,000 to $5,000 a day. It requires local officials to report violations, but exempts employees of school districts and educational records. The legislation fines local governments that don't comply with immigration officers between $1,000 to $5,000 a day. It requires local officials to report violations, but exempts employees of school districts and educational records. And the proposal leaves local officials open to being sued if a Florida resident is injured by an undocumented immigrant because of a sanctuary policy. Here's Representative Metz.
Well, the most egregious example of what we're trying to prevent with this particular provision of the bill is the Kate Steinle murder in San Francisco a year and a half ago, where the illegal alien was in custody, but because of a sanctuary policy, was released from custody.
Metz says local governments, including Hernando, Pasco, Pinellas, Palm Beach, and Broward counties, also refused to share identifying information of suspected undocumented immigrants. He says the people who don't report these kinds of violations may be kicked out of public office. Edward Labrador, a Broward County employee, says the bill analysis is wrong. Broward has no formal or informal sanctuary policies. He says police officers in that community have to have probable cause.
That's based upon interpretations by our federal courts, the interpretation of our laws, interpretation of our Constitution, of our civil liberties. The laws shouldn't peg you as a sanctuary jurisdiction.
Under the proposal, complaints would go to the Attorney General or state attorney who could bring the local government into court over the violation. The Florida Immigrant Coalition says U.S. citizens have actually been deported through ICE detainers. Metz says he doesn't want law enforcement to racially profile people, but he says the state needs to encourage legal immigration and discourage the illegal kind. And he says sheriffs don't need probable cause to detain someone they reasonably believe is here illegally. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sarah Mueller.
For the past several years, Florida's public colleges and universities have sought to shield high-level position searches from the state's Sunshine Law. The measure has repeatedly been swatted down, but as Lynn Hatter reports, the move to shade such searches is back again.
There's a revolving door that exists between the legislature and Florida's public colleges and universities. Lawmakers often end up in high-ranking positions. Take, for example, Florida's chief financial officer, Jeff Atwater, who will soon leave to take a university position. And one of the most notable is former Florida House Speaker, State Senator, and Republican Party of Florida Chairman John Thrasher, who now leads Florida State University. That decision did not go down without a bitter fight among FSU stakeholders. But the fight may have been mitigated had it taken place outside the public eye. Arguments for exempting university president, dean, and provost searches go like this.
I think that this gives us an opportunity to increase our pool of applicants.
There are a lot of leaders in higher education that are sitting presidents that don't want their name in the newspaper.
That was former State Senator Alan Hayes and former Florida Higher Education Chancellor Charlie Reed. This year's arguments are similar.
By exempting preliminary discussions prior to finals being announced, it will free our colleges and universities to pursue and hire the best and brightest without fear of appraisal from those current employers.
That's Republican Representative Bob Rommel, the bill sponsor. The present proposal is nearly identical to a similar effort filed in 2014, the year Thrasher was hired at FSU. Since then, there have been six successful presidential searches in the state. Democratic Representative Richard Stark says there's a reason searches are public.
And so we have to consider things like do candidates that are being vetted, do they have an inside track that maybe we wouldn't be happy about? Is there enough diversity in picking candidates? And we may not hear that or see that if we have this exemption.
Colleges and universities say Florida's Sunshine Law has hurt the presidential search process, and that in order for the state's public colleges and universities to lure top talent, such searches need to be private. But the First Amendment Foundation's Barbara Peterson has never bought it.
We have been operating in the sunshine for many, 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 many years. I mean, we have a long tradition of openness in Florida, and we've had some excellent university presidents. To say that we're not getting the best and the brightest seems to me to fly in the face of those people who have stepped forward, who have been elected or selected.
There is some bipartisan support on the idea to shield high-level college and university searches. Democratic Representative Ramon Alexander's district includes FSU and Florida State University. FAMU has endured difficult presidential searches in the past few years. And Alexander says the state's Sunshine Law has cut out good candidates.
I have talked to tons of people at these high-state roles where if they apply for a job, the lack of stability in their current role and the maneuvering and the jockeying, and because those positions are such high-level positions, they can be removed immediately. They have no type of protections. It cuts out a lot of significant talent.
The effort to change that could face a steep climb. While the House is forging ahead with the measure, it's historically failed in the Senate, and so far a companion bill has not moved in that chamber. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter in Tallahassee.
A state lawmaker's proposal to revoke in-state tuition for undocumented students has some on college campuses fearing for their futures. Joseph Sabias Roig has more.
Florida State University sophomore Hudson Lana has planned his immediate future. He works at least 20 hours a week as a Starbucks barista and takes 6 classes per semester. He intends to graduate with a bachelor's degree in marketing next year. That's if everything goes to plan. But uncertainty is inescapable for Lana. He is undocumented.
I spend a lot of my extra any extra time I get doing research on what can happen, what I can do, you know, groups that could help me and things like that.
In addition to fears of deportation, he is also worried about a proposal by Sarasota Republican Senator Greg Stube. It would revoke in-state tuition for undocumented students, and if it becomes law, Lana says, it will become impossible for him to afford the extra tuition needed to complete his degree.
If it were to, you know, affect me, then I would definitely have to drop out. Maybe try to raise money somehow, but I highly doubt I would be able to just because I don't have that money at all.
Currently, undocumented students who attended high school for at least 3 years in Florida qualify for in-state tuition. The savings are often significant. At FSU, in-state tuition and fees for the 2016-17 school year are around $6,500 compared to $22,000 for an out-of-state student. State data shows that nearly 900 students received the tuition break in the 2015-16 school year. But Senator Stube says he doesn't believe public tax dollars should be used to support education for, quote, illegal immigrants.
I voted against it when the bill passed, I guess it was 2 or 3 years ago now. I don't believe it's good public policy to allow tax dollars to go to illegal immigrants and pay their in-state tuition rates.
Stube says voters repeatedly voiced their concerns over illegal immigration during a Senate campaign last year. Critics of the in-state tuition break argue that it takes enrollment slots away from U.S. citizens and legal immigrants. Immigrant advocate Juan Escalante helped pass a law in 2014, an election year with a tight governor's race. After years of debate, House Bill 851 was privately signed into law by Governor Rick Scott. Escalante still has a copy of the bill hanging on his wall, given to him by the governor. He says Stube's proposal will only prevent taxpayers from getting a return on their investment.
Senator Stube's attempt is misguided. It's one that is attempting to point the finger at really hardworking immigrants who have been able to benefit from the public education system of this country, meaning that the taxpayer has made an investment in these individuals already.
Escalante says undocumented immigrants often do pay taxes, and he would be happy to share his tax documents with Stube. The proposal comes in the midst of a heated debate over immigration, particularly on college campuses. Over 600 college presidents across the nation have pledged to support their undocumented students, including many in Florida. Stube's proposal has an uphill battle before it, given that it has no House companion. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Joseph Zeballos-Roy.
Florida's unemployment rate was 5% in January. That's up 1/10 of a percentage point from the end of 2016, according to figures released today. Governor Rick Scott went to Herc Rentals, an equipment rental firm headquartered in Bonita Springs, to announce the numbers. In a news release, Scott focused on private sector job growth. He cited the creation of 51,000 new jobs in January. He also restated his support for the economic development agency Enterprise Florida. As you may remember, the House voted back on Friday to abolish Enterprise Florida amid a battle between Scott and House Speaker Richard Corcoran about economic development spending. The January mark represented 503,000 jobless Floridians. That's up 11,000 from December out of a labor force of just under 10 million. The state's unemployment rate is just 2/10 of a percentage point above the national figure of 4.8%. You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, did you know it's worse to vandalize a public telephone than deface a veteran's monument in Florida? As one of the most populous states for veterans, Florida lawmakers are trying to correct that, as we hear from Sasha Cordner.
My name is Siebert Newsom III. I live in Yulee, Florida. I'm a veteran. My father was a veteran of World War II. He was at Omaha Beach. And my great-grandfather's a veteran.
Seber Newsom III is normally outspoken on Confederate veteran issues. For example, representing the Save Southern Heritage Florida organization, he last year spoke against a bill to replace a Florida statue of a Confederate general in Washington, D.C. But this year, Newsom says he's advocating on behalf of all Florida veterans.
Monuments all over the state have been vandalized in the recent years. I have many pictures here. of them being vandalized, causing thousands and thousands of dollars worth of damage. World War II monuments, my father's monuments vandalized. Korea, Vietnam, Gulf War, even the 9/11 monument was vandalized. And the penalties right now for vandalizing these monuments is just a slap on the wrist.
And veteran Kelly Crocker agrees, saying just last month there were similar vandalisms in the panhandle.
I'm a registered voter here in Leon County, Florida, a property owner, native Floridian, a veteran of the first Gulf War, and a life member of the Veterans of Foreign Wars. There were about 20 gravestones damaged in Quincy, in Gaston County, Florida. We've got to put the brakes on this.
That's why both Newsom and Crocker are in favor of a bill by Republican Representative Brad Drake to increase the penalties to deter vandals from defacing or damaging a veteran's memorial. Today, the minimum penalty vandals could face is a second-degree misdemeanor charge, and Drake says it doesn't make sense compared to penalties for other crimes.
Criminal mischief that damages a church, a public telephone, or sexually violent predator facility constitutes a third-degree felony. That's the current law. This bill, 529, makes it a third-degree felony to willfully and maliciously injure, damage, or deface a memorial which honors or commemorates a soldier, a military organization or unit, a first responder, or an astronaut.
Bottom line, Drake adds,
those that give their life for this country and pay the ultimate sacrifice, I think that they should be respected and that there should be more deference given to those than to a telephone booth.
And Winter Park Republican Representative Mike Miller says it's odd it's taken this long for this to happen.
It's an excellent bill. I'm surprised. You trespass on a commercial construction site is a third-degree felony, and yet we don't have that for people that gave the ultimate sacrifice. It just stunned me.
Drake's measure now has one more committee stop before it heads to the House floor. Meanwhile, its Senate companion by Sarasota Republican Greg Stube has not yet had a hearing. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport, and please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2017 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 14,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. A resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.